Blog Talk Radio.
Good Sunday afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another segment of Coffee and Conversation. I am your host, Deborah Mitchell, and as usual, we are here on a Sunday afternoon and talking about gun rights in the recent situation with the Governor Gretchen Whitmer here in Michigan. There was an attempt on her life. A local militia group attempted to capture and execute her. And it caused quite a stir across the nation in terms of political rhetoric and those types of things that give rise to these types of issues. There was a situation at the onset of the pandemic where some of the members of that were arrested in this case were a part of the group or groups who stormed the Capitol in protest against Governor Whitmer's state emergency orders, and she was recently taken to court, lost the case, stating that she did, in fact, override her emergency powers and authority in shutting the state down. There's also active Black Lives Matter movement protests still going on here in Michigan. Some other organizations, Detroit Will Breathe, have protests going on as well. I think it's either just Detroit Will Breathe that is still protesting here in Detroit, or it's a combination of the two. I'm not sure if there's any active Black Lives Matter protests still going on. However, I do. I did become aware of the Derek Chauvin, the murdering officer of George Floyd, was released from jail, given bail until his trial, and allowed to leave his home state of record. I guess they did it for his safety. But he was allowed to leave the state of Minnesota while pending his trial in that case. So there's a lot of things going on. The pandemic is still going on. Economic hardship as it relates to the pandemic. Death as a result of the coronavirus. Cases are rising. Coronavirus cases are rising again, death tolls, hospitalization rates. All of these things are going on and culminating into a very hostile environment across the country that has high potentiality for gun violence. So I decided to just kind of briefly go over some things about the Second Amendment. This is not my wheelhouse. So, I'm going to go over some of the things that that I am finding out, actually, about Second Amendment gun rights and some other little tidbits as it relates to gun violence. So we're talking about the Second Amendment, and I want to go ahead on and bring up this image of the Second Amendment. That, give me a second, let me get that on the screen so that everyone can take a look at that while we go through our discussion. That's not what I wanted. Okay, hold on. I think my dog is also going to start barking. Yeah, I think this is the one that I want. I think that's the one that I wanted. Yes, that's the one that I wanted because I want everybody to be able to read it. I want to enlarge it all the way at first so that we can read this, and then we're going to talk about some of the Supreme Court rulings that have gone relating to gun rights. There's some very interesting things there, but I want to talk about some of the Supreme Court rules. Actually, there's not a lot in terms of Supreme Court rulings. Again, this is not my wheelhouse, so I'm not sure if lower courts have more addressed this issue more, but I would assume that it would come from the Supreme Court, and there's only a few cases as it relates specifically to the Second Amendment gun rights. But they are interesting all the same, and I want to give you guys a brief kind of history or some brief information as it relates to that and how it applies to us today. And then our current climate, racial divisions and all of these things that are going on that probably will not be remedied by the election. Donald Trump, in particular, has been quite successful in sort of highlighting the racial divide in the country. Not that it didn't already exist. It's just that there are things happening now. People seem to be more emboldened with their racial indifferences and things like that. So this is very important. Unfortunately, we have to look at this and figure out what the laws are and how they apply to us today. So the Second Amendment reads very simply, a well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state, the rights of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So that's very simple language, not so clear-cut in its interpretation, but we'll look at that. There's two basic arguments as it relates to the Second Amendment. Let me pull up my notes here because I want to make sure that I get through everything. There's two basic arguments, one in terms of interpretation. One is the prefatory clause and one is the operative clause. Now, the prefatory clause refers to the statement, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. That's one side of the argument. The operative clause refers to the statement, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So this is highly debated, but very rarely ever addressed judicially. So, but the rulings that have been made by, again, the Supreme Court are actually very interesting. So let's talk about, first of all, what is a militia? And I just have a general definition. Apparently, they are private organizations which vary in size, organization, ideologies, and purpose. The through line of these organizations, and I'm counting, I was able to come across maybe about 12 active militias here in the state of Michigan. I don't know if that number is correct. I will verify it, and of course, once I have the correct information, I'll get back to you. But again, they differ in size, they differ in purpose, they differ in ideology, and even in their approach and things like that. However, the through line, the commonality that they seem to have is the idea that they are sanctioned by law but unregulated by the government. Now, the original design of militias was as a paramilitary system to overthrow tyrannical government. The Second Amendment was written by James Madison reluctantly, but he did it as a compromise between the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists. The Federalists were those that agreed and wanted the Constitution in place, which kind of set forth ideas of power sharing between citizens and the government. And then you had your Anti-Federalists who preferred absolutism, which is the absolute power of the king, in our case, the president, the absolute power of the king, but in our case, it would be where the power would remain with the state. Of course, we do have a United States Constitution, so of course, we are under a federalist system to this day. That could very well change if depending on what happens with the Donald Trump election. So let's keep going. The Second Amendment was again written by James Madison. It was right after the Revolutionary War, and it was a situation where they put guns in the hands of the people to ensure in the future that they could protect themselves against tyranny of a government or a king in those days. So that was what they were originally designed for. Then when they wrote the Second Amendment, they wanted to give states the right to organize groups as an added protective measure for protecting the state. Now, similar to the National Guard or something like that that we have today. Now, this is very interesting because, militias are private organizations. The key operative word here is organization. They are a literal organization in most cases. Some of them, aren't legally organized, but a lot of them, most of them, I would assume, are, such as the KKK. The KKK is an incorporated religious organization. So this is the same thing with the militias. However, you have some that aren't legally organized, but again, most of them are. Like I said, the state was given the right to organize groups of people to own and carry guns for the added protection of the state and things like that. Now, what has happened throughout the years is that law enforcement departments and things like that have secretly utilized these groups particularly in times of civil unrest. Here in Michigan, you know, you don't see them. They're clearly here in the state, but you didn't see them until the Black Lives Matter movement with the protests and all of that broke out, and then they became active. So, again, you know, they have and are currently being used as an arm of law enforcement. I don't know if that is the legal use of a militia, but that does happen. And they bring them out to protect businesses and stuff because, well, they, you know, or under the guise of protecting businesses, you know, because the number one job of the police department, as we talked about in our segment with Jamie Van Alstyne, the political blogger who was here for Politics in Focus a few weeks back, we discussed that how that the priority and purpose of police departments, you know, is to protect property, not necessarily people. So, you know, so again, this is how these militias are being used even today. So, so the Second Amendment allowed people to have guns, protecting the right, and protecting that right ensured that people would be able to resist tyrannical governments in the future. It also gave states more of the ability to form militias similar to today's National Guard. So again, you know, that was the original purpose of militias, you know, those that are in operation legally and sanctioned by the state. Those that are sanctioned by the state should be the only ones that are in legal operation, but we know that is not true. I'm not sure. They did give a name of the group that had the plan to kidnap and execute Governor Whitmore. However, I don't know if they are a legally organized group. So, let's see. So let's talk about the arguments, the two basic arguments in terms of the language of the Second Amendment. Again, the first part, the first argument is relating to the prefatory clause, which references the statement a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The second argument is relative to the operative clause, which states the right of the people to keep and bear arms. So those that interpret the prefatory clause or argue the prefatory clause interpret it to mean that, because everybody's trying to figure out the original intent of the Founding Fathers when they wrote these things, whether it's the Constitution or a Bill of Rights or whatever other amendment. So their interpretation, those who argue for the prefatory clause, is that the Founding Fathers intended these rights to be applied strictly to the collective ability of states to organize groups who could carry guns. We just talked about that. As such, the federal government would have no authority to prohibit the state from doing so or confiscating the guns in the hands of the militia. So that is those who argue for the prefatory clause. That is their interpretation. The others who interpret the operative clause believe that the Second Amendment applies to individuals and as well as states. This group believes that the operative clause meant that every American citizen has the right to have a gun and that the federal government could not interfere with that right. Now, interestingly, the Supreme Court never even addressed this, as hotly debated as this issue is. The Supreme Court never even addressed the operatory clause, the operative clause, rather, until around 2008. Now, the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, was written in 1789. The Second Amendment was ratified in 1791. So from 1791 to 2008, I believe, and now look, let me look really quick. It took them that long to even deal with address the issue of individual ownership. I believe it was the D.C. versus Heller case. Yeah, that was the first time in 2008 when the Supreme Court finally addressed the issue of individual ownership. So it's very, very important that those who are gun owners and those who are planning to be gun owners, that you know, not just know the laws in your state, but to stay abreast of them because they can change. And there are some loopholes, and I'm going to talk about that in a second. There are some loopholes. But I want to give you guys some other information in terms of some other cases that that address the Second Amendment gun rights in the Supreme Court. So the first one was the Supreme Court versus, I believe it's pronounced Crooks Bank. This is a case where the KKK was preventing black people from buying guns. And this is despite the adoption of the 14th Amendment. So the case led to an allowance of violence and deprivation of rights against newly freed slaves, where their citizenship rights, equal protections under the law, and other provisions were being violated. And remember, we had the Dred Scott case. I'm trying to think. What year? I believe 1876. The Supreme Court versus Crooks Bank. Crooks Hank is the KKK case. That was in 1876. So again, it went to the Supreme Court because the KKK was preventing black people from buying guns. This is after the adoption of the 14th Amendment. Let's see. Then we had we talked about the Dred Scott case in 1857. You know, the black man has no rights that the white man is bound to respect. That ruling, we've gone on over that a bunch of times in our videos. So this is another example of how African Americans were disenfranchised by systemic racism. They literally, you know, were able to lock the black community out of their citizenship rights, their civil rights. Even with all of those laws in place, remember we talked about that, where they had to keep going in and writing amendments, and then they had the Civil War in 1863, when Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. 2 days later, Civil War broke out between the North and the South, and all of that history. We articulated that history in the other set of voting rights history videos. But this is all part of that. All of this stuff is going on at the same time, or within the same time frame. So this is the first ruling, the first time that the Supreme Court addressed. I want to make this clear. The first time that the Supreme Court addressed a case on Second Amendment rights was in 1876 where the KKK prevented black people from buying guns, despite the adoption of the 14th Amendment, and gave rise to a bunch of violence and things like that that was inflicted on the black community who were at that time newly freed slaves. Then you have the Dred Scott ruling. Y'all, excuse my dog, be quiet. So then you have, I didn't want to go back to the Dred Scott ruling. I wanted to go back to, I want to say this too, as it relates to the Supreme Court rulings. This is part of the concern and the preoccupation everyone has that's going on right now with the issues over the federal court. The Trump administration, you know, we just lost the judge Ruth, I forget her last name, and President Trump has now selected another nominee or nominated another judge to take her place. They don't want to let him do it. However, he has already appointed 218. Either he has appointed 218 federal judges already, or she will make number 218 with judges who have lifetime, of course, lifetime appointments, and are, you know, typically the ones that he is appointing are far right. So when you have that type of situation, these laws can be changed. They can be changed and maneuvered and things like that. And again, there are some loopholes, and I want to talk about that. But, you know, again, in dealing with these federal judges and the appointment of judges and things like that and these Supreme Court rulings, which shape American life, our everyday lives, when they weigh in on a social problem, it literally determines how we live and operate and function in society, literally. So this ruling here, again, did never address whether or not the laws that prohibit certain people from owning guns are constitutional. And that's very important because in this case we're talking about black people, but this loophole is still in, it's still there. Laws that prohibit, state laws that prohibit certain people from owning guns. Now, we're not talking about felons or mentally ill or anything like that. Laws that prohibit certain people from owning guns have never, ever, to this day, been addressed by the Supreme Court. Very, very interesting. So there's a big gaping hole there. Now, this is just to my understanding. You can do your own research and check it out to see what you can find out about it, but to what I have come across or the understanding that I have come to, that loophole is still there and open for, and, you know, it's just open. So in this case, in the Kook Tank case, the final decision, the court ruled that the Constitution did not give individuals the right to own guns and that some citizens, and again, in this case, black people, could be prevented from doing so. Again, that loophole is still there. Never has been addressed. A second Supreme Court ruling upheld that ruling, this initial ruling, 10 years later, which gave states the green light to restrict citizens' gun rights, just not the federal government. So, you know, there was another one. Then in 1894, Miller versus Texas, the court decided on a case where a man sued the state for prohibiting him from carrying a concealed weapon. The court again said the of the Second Amendment did not apply to states. In 1939, a man named Miller argued that the National Firearms Act, which prohibited sawed-off shotguns, violates the Constitution. The court disagreed, stating that because sawed-off shotguns weren't necessary to a well-regulated militia, the federal government was free to regulate them. This was another way of saying some guns were not covered under the protection of the Second Amendment and therefore could be regulated, like your assault rifles and things like that. They regulate those because these are above and beyond what is necessary to be a well-regulated militia. So that is important to remember. I have a note here. I want to read some of my notes. It says that it is important to note that for a long time in America, there was a tradition all the way to the Supreme Court of believing that the Second Amendment didn't mean that states or the federal government couldn't intervene with gun laws. So we just talked about that. There are certain circumstances and exceptions where this, whether it's the state or the federal government. Because really, the Second Amendment is designed to protect individuals and states from federal oversight. That's basically, in the nutshell, what the Second Amendment does. However, there's a sort of unspoken rule that there are exceptions, in notable exceptions, where the state or the federal government can intervene with gun laws. Again, like we talked about, like assault rifles, and in the case with the sawed-off shotgun, they disagreed with that argument and allowed that type of gun, in particular, just to fall under federal regulation. Then, again, that was in, 1939. Supreme Court went silent again all the way up until 2008, where, and by the way, in 2008, because the militias really have been, you know, were quiet. Many years, but there was a resurgence of militia activity due to the election of Barack Obama in 2008. So you had another case to come up, D.C. versus Heller, where a police officer argued that the state capitol, ban on handguns was unconstitutional, and the court agreed with him. So this is very interesting because we have new legislation that's being drafted. Like I said, they tried to capture and had a plan to put the governor on some type of pseudo trial, and make some type of citizens or quote unquote citizens arrest to capture her, kidnap her, and her. Because they're supposed to be these militias are supposed to be sovereign citizens or something like that. I would have to do more research on it to really know the ins and outs, or just to find out more about it. But again, you know, so since that has happened just in the past week, there's new laws being drafted to ban open carry at the state capitol. Well, here's the Supreme Court ruling right here, 2008, D.C. versus Heller, where an officer argued that the Capitol's ban on handguns was unconstitutional, and the Supreme Court agreed with him. They ruled in his favor. So, just my opinion, but look for this argument again, because you know, with them trying to ban open carry at the Michigan State Capitol due to the threat that was on Governor Whitmore, they're probably going to bring this up. So it's going to be very interesting to watch. And by the way, Governor Whitmer, I was watching an interview that she had on another podcast or whatever, and apparently, because they talked about the militia staking out her vacation home, and I guess that was the plan to capture her or arrest her, as it were, at her vacation home. But in this interview from a few months ago, she talked about the fact that there have been threats on her life since she shut the state down in March, late March, I believe it was March the 23rd, and that she had watched armed militia members surrounding or standing outside of her home, you know, with her and her daughters looking out of the window. So it's very, very dangerous, very dangerous, and just disturbing on so many levels. But, you know, that is what has been happening. So this has been going on with her for a while. So, in this 2008 Supreme Court ruling, D.C. versus Heller, it ruled that there was an individual right to, individual right to own guns, and that was not connected to being to militias. So, in other words, the Supreme Court finally said, okay, whether you're part of a militia or not, the Second Amendment does give individual rights, all American citizens, to own guns. Carry is different. You know, who can carry is really kind of falls under the realm of the state. However, again, that the loophole is still there. So, it says that, okay, when this court did this ruling in 2008, it still failed to weigh in on whether laws that prohibit certain people from owning guns as unconstitutional. So that issue has never been addressed all of these years from 1791. Okay. The justice only wrote that the decision should not be taken as to cast doubt on long-standing prohibitions on the possession of firearms by felons and the mentally ill. We talked about that. Or laws forbidding the carrying of firing arms in sensitive places, such as schools and government buildings, or laws imposing conditions and qualifications on the commercial sale of firearms. That's another issue with Governor Whitmer. Part of their anger, they were saying that these gentlemen who was going to kidnap and execute her were mad over her state laws or emergency laws for everyone to wear masks. No, part of their anger, the majority of their anger, is about the fact that she closed down, she deemed gun stores as non-essential, which allowed her to shut them down. But she did that for a reason, because there's already empirical data that indicates during a pandemic the type of rise in mental health, the type of rise in substance abuse, the type of rise in suicide rates, the type of rise of gun violence and all of those types of things. So for public safety, Governor Whitmer deemed gun stores as unconstitutional. Now, you got a robust hunting community here. So what she was indicating was that she was trying to find ways to, you know, respect them and what they do, and as well as keep the overall general public safe. And of course, then the George Floyd protest, the Black Lives Matter protest, broke out in the middle of all of this stuff. So there was a public safety issue. So she just she found a way to shut down the gun stores and put them under the state emergency guidelines. And that is part of what they're mad about. Even Trump and his allies, they were mad about the same thing. He's still tweeting, liberate Michigan. He was tweeting that this week. So this is what it's all about. But again, for public safety, gun stores were made unconstitutional. However, so this is part of what the justice who ruled in that 2008 decision indicated, is that their decision was not to cast doubt on long-standing prohibition on gun possession and laws forbidding the carrying of firearms in sensitive places such as schools, government buildings, or laws imposing conditions and qualifications on the commercial sale of firearms. Those conditions and qualifications can include anything from history of mental illness to history of incarceration where a potential buyer may have a felony on their record and things like that. Of course, we know they are not allowed to purchase firearms. So, so there's still laws limiting gun ownership, and again, this is a loophole. So this is something that people need to pay attention to. And again, this 2008 ruling was the first time that the Supreme Court specifically addressed the individual's right to own a gun for all American citizens. So again, then there was one last case in 2016 where it indicated that the Second Amendment applies to all guns, regardless of when they were invented. So, remember we were talking about the one case with the guy that sued, I believe, Texas because of his sawed-off shotgun. There, this 2016 came back and said, regardless of when a gun was invented, that the Second Amendment applies. In the sawed-off shotgun case, it wasn't the issue of when it was invented, it was the type of gun it is. And that is the distinguishing factor, that whether or not a gun falls under the protection of the Second Amendment. In between 2008-2016, it was a Supreme Court decision that ruled against the state of Chicago, the city of Chicago and Illinois, which stated that Chicago did not have the right to ban handgun ownership. So that was another case in between there. So those are the cases. How many did I have? Looks like 3, 4, 5, maybe 5 or 6 cases in the Supreme Court relating to gun rights. Who is here? Michigan Supreme Court rules Ms. Whitmer's shutdown order in violation of the state constitution. Yes, what is your name? Joe D. Yes, they did. She did lose that case. I did read about that. They said that she overextended her powers or her emergency powers or something like that. But what I was talking about is the issue of the militia members that were trying to kidnap and execute her was about the when she shut down the gun stores, too. They tried to say it was about wearing masks, but it was more to it than that. So, yes, she did lose that case, and the Michigan Supreme Court did rule that she overextended her powers. That was maybe a week or two ago. I did see that. So, however, I just wanted to come on briefly and talk about this. This is something that we just need to pay attention to as a public health issue. There absolutely could be a rise in gun violence as a result of the enormous amount of stressors going on associated with the pandemic, the protests, you know, again, economic hardships. People don't have jobs, are losing their jobs, are being furloughed. There's no stimulus package to give people any type of relief. Mental health issues are rising. Substance abuse issues are rising. Trump was tweeting the other day to say that people, there's been a rise in suicide rates. I have not personally looked at that data, but, you know, in specifically here in Michigan, from what the president is saying. So certainly there is enough going on that is, you know, that could potentially, you know, be a spontaneous combustion. And so we need to look at these types of things. Unfortunately, we have to. So I wanted to give you guys that information. If anyone has a comment, please put it up on the screen. I don't believe that I had any callers today. I didn't. So I'm going to go ahead on and sign off. I want to make sure that you guys know about voting. To order your absentee package. To order your absentee package, you would go to, let me put this up on the screen real quick. To do your absentee package, to order your absentee package, rather, you would go to mi.gov/vote, mi.gov/vote. The phone number that you can call is to order your package is 313-876-VOTE, 313-876-VOTE. That is for here in the state of Michigan. I'm going to be linking, going back and link resources